Muskie 360 podcast, a Jaybird. We've been trying to reach you about your car's extended warranty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we get those calls all the time.
All day, baby. Don't buy the extended warranty. Don't. It's a scam.
Have you thought about refinancing your mortgage?
Yes, every day. Not really, no.
There you go.
No. Actually, in retrospect, no. I bought when it was crazy low.
Actually, now the calls are just like there's a big pause, so you have to say, you know, Muskie Shop, you know, more, you know, can we help you? And you wait and you wait, and then, you know, an automated voice goes, hello.
And then
Like your Google services read on?
That's when you just sounded like you're from Medford. Would you like your, anyway? Hey there. Why aren't automated voices Wisconsin stereotypes? Hey there, been trying to get a hold of you regarding your car's extended warranty.
Okay, we got to do that next week. That's the Andrew Butch right there.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, we're on top of it. Guys, sorry I'm a day late here. Just got done, Jay, at yet another trade show. So that was exciting.
Is that sarcasm?
Yeah, it was all...
We got a great deal on bobbers. If you buy 400, we'll throw in 36.
Frick, or the Tom Rudis special, right? Buy like 200K worth of reels. We'll throw in a tackle barn. the classic, that one of them, I won't say what brand, running a t-shirt special, Jay. For just 50K, you get a t-shirt. Well, you know,
the only drawback, they're all mediums.
And if this is the fishing business and no one wears a medium.
No one's that small.
No. There's two phenotypes in the industry of fishing, right? Like your builds make small. You either have real tall white guy, real short fat white guy. That's it. No in betweens. You got the two.
Now, what sizes do you have? Well, we got extra large and huge.
Extra large and huge. That was cool. Like I said, always running and gunning again. That was another, that's one of those business to business numbers I've talked about. And Jay, I got popped, got narked out this week.
What do you mean?
Listen, I was saying, hey, guys walking around the clipboards, our good friend from MEPS heard me and we were laughing about it this morning. So it's nice to see a friendly face to the Muskie Shop at the show. So MEPS was down there.
Barry?
Yeah,
The way down in Tennessee.
They let him cross the state lines in a shocking twist. So, no, the old MEPS, they do brisk business with everything, but it was kind of funny. And, you know, the southern shows are always cool. So it's the inside scoop on the business. It's not that exciting, but man, I'm glad to be talking muskies again, Jay. No one cares here. Talked more bass than I care to ever talk in my life. You know,
that's probably bass and catfish.
Can I tell you the sad thing? Didn't know anything about it. Just went, yeah, that's great. That's what I would get.
All other fish are just bait, Steve.
Well, you know, whatever. I was just trying my best. Just not. Oh yeah, that's the one, boys. That's the one you need. it went swimmingly, but it's that fun thing there with the trade shows. They're always something. But anyway, didn't see anything. I'll tell you this. Didn't see anything like life altering. You know, obviously this is a business to business, but did pick up one cool thing. Called you, Jay, and said, hey, can I pull the trigger on this? Let's do this thing, right? Which are some jaw spreaders I'd actually picked up years ago, and we're finally able to get our hands on those. And I go, people just wreck their cars listening to the podcast out of excitement over a new set of jaw spreaders that'll be there. Freaking out. Folks, keep calm. These are the best jaw spreaders ever, but there's no reason to panic. So...
Not jaw spreaders, jaws spreaders.
Jaws. Jowls?
Forget it.
Whatever. You lost me. But nonetheless, that was about the only thing that was cool because it's like a saltwater jaw spreader. So we'll let you know when those go in. And then our friends at Meeps, I think that's how you pronounce the company name, Meeps, did get a little inside scoop. He's going to have some cool custom bucktail cars this winter, sounding like. Coming into that, so they're working on some more cool meeps. So you'll have, like, I think some special double fascia booze and all that stuff. So they always treat us
Okay.
No, it's, I thought, it's not, it's pronounced meps. My apologies.
Well, you've been down south all day. Meeps. I get it.
Got the meeps. Anyway, what's happening at the Muskie Shop? What is the coming and goings of the Muskie Shop, Jay?
Oh, yeah. Well, the calendar, baby.
Hold your horse. Oh,
we got the calendar out.
Oh, mark the days. If you're in prison, this is a great one to have to count down your days till execution, folks, with a beautiful muskie picture for each month.
Yes. 2026 calendar is out.
Looks like we got the preview on the back. What we have here.
November. 12 months.
I'm going to name November. We're going to call that Muskrat Trouble. Okay. September is Thunder on the Water. July is my grandkid just missed a 55. I hate him. I'm never taking him muskie fishing again.
Yep, that's the one.
Right.
Go to April.
Okay, I listen. I'm getting a calendar just that every month could be April. I know one of the artists behind this, right? I was not informed of how ripping April. I might get that tattooed on my neck. Good Lord, is that amazing? Yes, I've not seen that. That is, Jay, that is next year's can of whatever that is the artwork for next year's can of the energy drink at the Muskie Shop Bash. I'm not going to ruin it for you, folks. Just get on here and check out April. That's so stupid.
Called America Juice.
America. Bring on the pain, communists. Take that, you commie son of a bitch. Man, that is freaking retarded. Kudos.
That's so cool.
Kudos to the Muskie Shop for letting that one go by. June is like kind of like Renoirish and beautiful. April is just here comes hell on earth. Right. Next year will be Macho Man Randy Savage biting a muskie. That's a strong image. It's a strong image. Anyway, sorry, let me get off that tip. That's ridiculous. So stupid. So, I'm sorry, folks. I'm not going to ruin it. You got to get on there and look at April and just go, come on. Like, freaking, dude, that pretty much takes, I'm sorry. Literally, April. I'm not going to say what it is because you got to see it for yourself. And surely if you're so sardonic and sarcastic as me and JR, you'll go, come on. However, I promise you, mark my words, at some point in your life, you will now hear a story that some moron is like, yeah, one time I saw that happen. There I was on Big Kitten Lake and there it came down right there. Yeah, exactly.
I've heard multiple versions of that one.
Whew. Anyway, yeah, you know what? Whew. You better be lucky we don't have 13 months because there's another one worked up called Muskrat Love.
Okay.
But that one landed on the cutting room floor for obvious reasons. What else we got going on here? Anything else? Nothing. Okay. Nothing crazily new there. Although, just throwing it out here. Let me see. Did I talk about Laker Howe winning that tournament last week for Livingston?
Uh-oh.
Okay, so this is not a bad bass podcast, but I had to do the write-up and work with all that crap with Livingston. So get a call. Laker Howe wins first place in a Bassmaster event, which is a huge deal. You know, that's the best of the best.
That's great.
Yeah. He pulls a number one on TV on the Walking Boss, the bass size one. Right. Just annihilated out of the color. Actually, I'm looking here. We're one of the few people that have a couple left. If you're a bass guy, check that out. If you're hiding it from your family and you go, hey, babe, I'm going out muskie fishing, but you secretly hide it from your wife and kids that you target bass out of shame. This is kind of mean. Well, it's true, though. It's like, do you really want your, like, imagine, like, hey, I'm going to go bass fishing. That doesn't sound cool. Well, maybe if you won 80 grand, maybe I'm just jealous. Yeah, but no. So if you're secretly hiding that you have a double life on the water and throw bass baits, it's worth a look because they just annihilate it. And then literally his dad turned around, like I said, I guess it was a week to the day later, and just pulled $80,000 on that third place tournament win versus like 1,500 other anglers, Jay, which is just a ridiculous statement. So kind of neat. And I think
what part of the country was that in?
Alabama. Bama Lamb. Whoa.
Crimson Bama Tide.
Lamb. Roll Tide.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think that's the first and only time anyone will ever say Roll Tide on this podcast.
Roll Tide.
I hope last time. Yeah, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel I feel dirty.
Sorry, boys.
Shower break. We'll be back in 5. Jay, how was your shower break?
That was awesome. Hey, speaking of showers, guess what I was throwing just about 2 hours ago on Lake Minocqua? Banshee, Critter, and Menace.
Did you actually go throw them? Good. What do you think?
Yeah, I went out there with Tom. So, Tom threw them. So, yeah, got some underwater on them. So,
hopefully, Tom used them right. Jay, did you coach him up, Jay?
Get him dialed in. Yeah, I've got him. I think I got him dialed in. Yeah, the water's a little murky. It's like, you know what the problem is right now? Is that it's that time of the year and all the piers got yanked out pretty much on almost every lake. So there's a permanent pier on Lake Minocqua, and right now the water's like, not that great for filming.
So you ever yank your piers, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so it's what? You're just getting ready for winter.
Getting ready for winter.
Yanking piers.
Getting ready for ice, man. It's sad, but it's coming right around the corner. So is turnover.
Wow, that's
turnover's right around the corner. I'd rather not talk about it unless we have to.
That's kind of like, I think that's next week. I was in my today. I was driving back from the show. Like,
nothing's turning over, folks. Let's wait till next week. Yeah, good plan. I like it.
Who knows? It's the big cool off. What are you hearing? What's the report? What's the word on the street? What are you hearing? What's the hot news? Give me the skinny.
Hot news in muskie fishing? Yeah, water temps quickly got down to 60, and they're dipping below that a little bit in some areas. So primo sucker fishing weather. Primo everything's working. A lot of shallow fish on blades. A lot of some topwater action I heard of. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the last 4 days or so here. And we've had stable weather, so there has been no great like hard cool down or super warm weather. It's just been, you know, high of 60 every day more or less. So
nice.
Good. Yeah, it's slowly getting everything down there, and a lot of people just seem to be slowing down the presentation, fishing a little bit deeper on the edges, and more of the same. You know, hate to be a broken record, but yeah, there's a lot of different bait types that are working because I think the fish are all over the place. Column, you know,
same.
They're all over the place.
I mean, I had a nice cool off. I was talking about that last week, and then it's like one more hot push. Hopefully, this is the last one because now it's that wild swing temps. It's like low of 55, high of 83.
You're in the midst of that right now.
It's like, oh, cool. Okay. I don't feel so good. You know, you're like, why do I have a headache at noon every day? You know, so that we get that every year, kind of the wild swing time. It's back and forthies right now, but kind of getting out of it. But finally, even with those, if say you have those hot, midday temperatures, you're back in a hoodie in the evening. So it's really not enough to really counteract those overnight cool offs, you know. So anybody that's seeing that, I know, like obviously south, mid south, or some of these places where you're still, and I've had guys text in an email, and if you're fighting that, it's in the mid 70s or even tickling up to that, just pay more attention to, obviously pay attention to everything, but pay more attention to the water temps and how they're reacting, because you know when you have that extended cooling off period overnight, that's going to do a lot of damage for you. You know, it's going to knock things down, and, you know, you need that drop. You need that temperature drop to kind of get the food chain rocking and rolling and get up shallow. Jay, I've not heard, and again, it's mixed bag everywhere. I've not heard anything that's dynamite per se. I've heard a lot of different bites happen a lot of different ways. I was talking to both the Herbecks, both old Herbeck and young Herbeck.
And they're seeing the same thing up
same
there?
Same thing.
Eagle Lake?
And okay. It's get them when you get them. Mm-hmm. Still tight windows. The defining factor this year has been how tight the bite windows are. Of whatever that window might be, whether it's a sunset or it's sunrise or... You know, this summer I was just touting the importance of how heavy the major was hitting for us at times. Whatever that bite window is, and again, preface this with if you got one day to go fish, you should probably be running sun up to sundown if you've only got one day to do it. To get data, unless you got a clue from somebody, right? If you got a couple days, maybe you can play around with it. But if you're not really dialed in on the when, you know, seasonally can dial in a little bit more on the where, obviously. But it's just been really devoid of moisture. Jay, have you guys been getting a lot of rain or anything? Or I mean, it's been wacky.
No.
Yeah,
it's dry. Been somewhat dry for the last 3 weeks. Yeah.
So you get this dry thing, and you okay. There's not a lot of weather push. It's anybody's guess. And the cool thing is this, if it lines up for you, that if you do get weather coming in here in the last month, the days that it's rolling in have just been killer, right? Those have just been some of the best days I can recall them forever. But everything else is just crap. You know, it just is like, okay, cool. Danny was bemoaning, to me on the phone, he's like, he had a 6-fish day, right? And he's still whining about it because he's a whiner. But nonetheless,
was that with Mads Grozel?
No.
Oh, okay.
That Mads was up there, but that was a whole. Oh, that's something we need to mention. Not to. Let's take another shower break. I'm kidding. gotta stay on it. Something to mention. That we just thrown out there is what's going on with the beast, Jay. I'll let you handle that in the most professional way possible and kind of give up an update because I actually did get asked about that just the other day. So we had talked about it. We put the video out. Tell everybody what's going on and where to go from there.
Well, I don't know quite as much as I'd like to know about that, but the Abu Garcia beast came out, and from what I've been told, they basically recalled it because they weren't happy with the drag. They did some testing on the drag. It's supposed to be around 30 pounds, and they were measuring it and found it was more like 15. And they found some kind of issue. I'm not exactly sure if it's a part or if it's something over-lubricated or what, but they're going to fix it quickly. They asked for us to pull it off the internet and off the shelves until they... You know, they fix the situation and make it right for everybody because they want it perfect. So I give them credit for that. It stinks. It stinks for everybody involved. If you did get one and you notice that the drag doesn't seem to be up to snuff, we'll take care of it for you. Abu will take care of it for you. Like I said, they were saying last week that they could have it done in 2 weeks. So this is possibly a remedied situation by sometime next week. Again, that's about all I know detail-wise. I don't know the exact issue other than they weren't 100% happy with the drag performance on it. So something slipped by, and they're correcting it as fast as possible. So anybody out there... As a matter of fact, somebody came in to get one, and he was fishing over in Hayward, and I think he was just buying another one, but he said, you know, I was fishing it, and the drag did seem kind of loose, like it didn't quite have enough up to par. They were throwing hard, pulling baits, and they noticed it was slipping a little bit, mm-hmm. So I said, oh, boy, okay, well, you know, told him the situation that, you know, we can get it replaced for you as soon as possible, so... things like this happen. I'm glad they're addressing it and they're, you know, manning up to the whole thing instead of putting out something subpar and just, you know, let the chips fall where they may. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, it happens. We're mass producing things here, but Danny and I were hucking and chucking. He saw that video, and who knows? You know, still a great product. Like I said, they'll get it fixed. So there was just a lot of guys that, I mean, at least they did it quick. So there's not a lot of them out there. But now you're in the know. The more you know. That's our PSA for the day, Jay.
Don't know the tune, but thank you.
You don't remember that? Like all the freaking crap back in the 80s? It was like public service announcements, and they'd have the more you know jingle at the end. Maybe not. Maybe. What happened to you in the 90s? What were you doing? What were you on? What's wrong with you?
Deep breath. Are we going straight to Q&A?
I guess. I have two Gen 1 9-foot and 12 3D suckers with magnetic harness. Okay, so we're talking Savage gear. Yep. My question is, how can I keep the harness secure in the rear? I don't want to buy two new three wires and waste these baits. I was thinking a rubber band or Gorilla gluing magnets together. Now, okay, so if the magnets need glue, they're probably weak. So what is this? Let me look at the suckers. Where is this thing? This is why I have a billion baits, Jay. Let me find
it. Savage Gear Gen 1. We threw that, and you might remember Remember when we were on that river system?
Oh, that's
through that. That's, and you caught that big pick on it.
Yeah, yep. That's the one that's in my hand. Okay, so the Gen 1, folks, and this is again Mads. This is a Mads bait from Savage Gear, very Euro inspired. So what they did is they did a breakaway harness, and I'm going to give you a little ready for a little free education, Jay.
Hit me.
So these Euro folks, they like the breakaway harnesses on their swim baits. They feel like that the fish have less of a chance to throw the bait, and it also saves the plastic. That's why you see them do breakaway harnesses, right? Americans, if you will, Merc, we like them a little bit more rough and ready, right? So that's why you have the wire harness inside and all this stuff. But we do it the right way. Nonetheless, to each their own. That's kind of the purpose drive behind this, is they're trying to save the bait, and they feel like there's less of a chance if the bait is free swinging, they feel like it can't throw it as well, whatever. But that means with your Gen 1, I have one in my hand here, you have a wire that's fed in the body and this magnet system. So there's a little wire pin you shove into the plastic. It keeps the wire aligned, right? And then the magnet. So if it's coming apart, joking, saying the magnets, I'm seeing that contact point, super glue it. If it's not staying, just glue it. You won't have that problem again. And if it were I would actually, there's a channel here, my dude, on the bottom that has the wire in it. You could even seal that up, just put some gel super glue in there and compress that channel with your fingers lightly. Now, that will save you a little bit of guff, too, so the wire's not trying to work its way out. Now, you hook into a big fish, that'll all probably come undone, but it's worth it at that point, right? So, that'll Americanize your Euro bait a little bit. But, the magnet, that's what he's talking about. They have a magnet, folks. For those of you that don't have a Gen 1 sucker from Savage Gear in your hands right now, Jay, which is not, that's most of the audience has one in their hands right now.
Not too many do.
Nope. Okay. Maybe I'm wrong, but anyway, no, the magnets line up here in the back and that through wire. I can see because the magnet that's in there is actually on a spring. I'm pulling out with my fingers here. So that's what's cooking. Yeah. Just glue it and be done with it. You know, it ain't going to hurt anything. Jay, what's your Savage Gear Gen 1 3D sucker story?
I watched you catch one, and then it got ripped up by that pike.
That is true.
And then we had to rebuild it, yeah. So the Gen 2, problem solved.
Problem solved. Take that, commie. Ethan, what rod holders do you prefer for trolling the big water and why? So I'm a Folby man. That's it. Folby man. Catching all the muskies when he can. So I use Folbies. I'm very comfortable with those. I don't think big water or small water is going to really matter. And this is what, and here comes the annual Folby spiel, not endorsed by them. Actually, I talked to the guy. Funny Folby story, Jay. When I was putting the POS system in, accidentally, for some reason, when Folby has to call the store, they call my phone, right? And that's a legit mistake, right? It's on like the invoice thing. If you automatically ever seen that where it generated it in the past?
That's not good.
Yeah, he still hasn't fixed it in his cell phone. So every time I have to go, this isn't the store number. Hold on, let me get you over there. But he's a good dude. Never said, hey, give me some free stuff or anything. I just love the product. But, and just a funny aside for everybody there. But those rod holders are, you know, they're made in the USA. So they're warrantied. They're not plastic. And I'm not knocking anything. I'm not here to say this, that, and the other. I have had rod holders, your standard plastic rod holders, right? Your Scotties, your like the ones you would just go to a Bass Pro and buy that are kind of like white labeled OEM Scotty level or lesser level rod holders that are ABS. When it gets cold, that plastic will just shear. It will crack. It will break. The Folbies are a composite material. So they're plastic, but they have a composite, some kind of, I don't know, they've a little bit of witchcraft or whatever they've done to them to make them
nearly indestructible.
Yeah, they're like,
they really are.
You can grab one of these rod holders and just like yank on it and do all kinds of things and turn it, and it's not going to break. It doesn't like a tremendous, you know, it can handle a tremendous amount of force there, and the cold doesn't affect it at all. You know, the other options for indestructible and robust is going to be your Down Easts, right? Which is the
other metal.
Mm-hmm. And let me look at those because, I mean, I'm always, you don't have to fish what I fished. That's the fun of musky fishing. So let's look at the Down East. If I ran a rail system, I would probably be interested in that because it is such a small footprint, right? So you have the Down East, which if you run a rail system, that would be worth looking at. They're very versatile, indestructible, all metal. They can freeze up in the cold, big water. That's the one thing I don't like about metal rod holders, right? They're more prone to freezing. With the Folbies, a little trick as we're getting into Wintar here is I will take and just lube those up about twice a winter. They will not freeze. You're always going to be able to pull the rod out. So that's kind of my thought process there. Jay, is there anything else?
Yeah, the footprint. You do look at the footprint difference between those salties, the metal ones. Yeah. They are probably a quarter of the size, a quarter of the surface area. So
that's
they're not sticking up in the way. So
that's why they pay me the big bucks. Have you not read my blog, rodholderreview.org?
Rodholderweekly.org.
Dude, it's like, you know, 400, 500 posts a week on rod holders.
That like, you can find that on creedthoughts.com?
I don't know what that is, but okay.
It's from The Office.
Oh, whatever. Don't waste my time. Stop wasting my time. Anyway, Scotty. Well, okay, what we got? We got Scotty, Down East, and Folby, right? Yeah, there you go. The big difference is going to be your footprint. That's about it. I mean, I like them both, but, you know, the only other thing, too, is with those metal rod holders, you're more liable to chew a rod up your handle. The Folbies, there's a lot of surface area give there. So, books, check them out. What else we got here, Jay? Working through it. This is what happens when I've been up since 5. You know?
Yeah.
This is,
me, too.
You have not.
Yeah, well, 5:30.
Jay goes in at noon.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, good afternoon, boys. Love the podcast. Good humor, something I can relate to. Fishing
humor.
I don't know what he's talking about, and I find it to be offensive. Go back to your... He says he's been musky fishing for over 50 years, probably from a ranger. Anyway. Sorry. Okay, so I'm old. We're all getting there. Prepare 50... Oh, hold on, what does he say? Okay, so I'm old. We're all going to get there. Be prepared. 50 degrees feels like 40. 10 miles an hour feels like 30. You get the picture. That's just me on a typical morning. Everything hurts. With over 50 years of record keeping, this has to be the most difficult fall I can remember. Fish have flowage. Water level has been up and down consistently. Water temperatures have been about the same, coming down now about 64 degrees. Looking at records, should be about 50 to 55, so we're warmer than usual. That being said, last 2 years, water temps have been high, but still put some nice fish in the net. This year, difficult to get a looker. Fish average 5 days a week, around 6 hours per day. So he's fishing 5 days a week, 6 hours a day. Nice. Trolled a lot, fishing deep, shallow, everything in between. Bait fish are all 20 to 30 feet of water, never changing. Past records indicate bait are in 10 to 15 of water, coming very shallow light. Daytime trolling has worked well in the past. Anyway, let me summarize the bomb here. Looking at years of records from weather patterns to bait selection, retrieve speed, location, structure, water fish, he says I'm lost. Still going to give it hell in November with my last name. I'm bullheaded and stubborn. Once again, love the podcast. So, okay. He's got a Polish last name, Jay. So I can't even pronounce it. We got an M, we got an R, and there's a Z.
Probably some Y's and yeah. Okay.
Moronsky. I get it. That's fine. Anyway, he's poking fun at himself. No, I like it, and I'm usually one of those but he's giving information, right? Where he's actually really kept diligent notes. And
oh yeah, sounds like it. Yeah.
That's why what was he saying about
He saying about water levels? They've been up and down, but it's not that outside of the norm.
I don't know. I wasn't probably paying attention.
Me either.
Throw a bucktail.
Anyway, no, you're not alone. There's something real strange about my flowage this year. I've got theories, but it's
my
been
flowage
pretty bad.
Jay, my flowage. Anyway, let's really dissect here. So we're a little hot by, could be, depending on which way you shake it, 14 degrees to, you know.
That's a lot.
Six, okay. Water temps have been higher. Okay, water temps have been high. Nice fishing boat. I'm looking here, folks. Okay. Bait fish are all deep, 20 to 30. And they're not changing this year. Past records indicated bait 10 to 15. So we've doubled our depth, right? We've doubled our depth is the main thing here, right? So water temperatures have, I'm trying, it's the classic, Jay. What's the causation, right? And the water temperature is not high because the bait fish are deep. Right? The water temps didn't go up because the bait fish are deep. The bait fish are deep because the water temps are high. Right? And he's seeing that the fish are not coming up. You know, daytime trolling has worked well in the past, but this year, nothing. Shallow fish movement is nowhere to be found. So breaking this down, because Dick gave us a lot of really good information here. And like I said, Cattley saying the bait fish staging is not, you know, the temperature is not changed because of the bait fish. The bait fish has changed because of the temperature. And he's saying daytime trolling is not really working right now. So we have deep staged bait, right? We're not having daytime activity. This is what I call at the risk of, I don't even know, Jay, it might be a racist term, Mexican standoff. I don't think it is, but I'm throwing it out there because I have no other good term for it. When I see like a complete basin just really choked with bait at depth, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say I'm seeing a ton of bait at 20 to 30. And with this flowage, I'm guessing, okay, he put his, like a nice gentleman, he put his phone number in here. Heck, let's try him, Jay. What do you say? Why not? He could be insane. Yeah. I like the question. Let's try him.
Get him on the phone.
If not, we'll
let him in.
Let him in. Let him in. Oh, my goodness. Why not? I like the question. Let's work through it together as a team. Hold on, Jay.
Hello?
Is this Dick?
Hello?
Dick.
Yes.
You're on the Muskie 360 podcast with Steve and Jay Bird. How you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. We were actually sitting here dissecting your question, right? And I don't want to make assumptions, and I rarely ever do this, but I said, like a nice gentleman, he put his phone number in here. I was just kind of going down the rabbit hole on this, and because you've provided so much information, right? So you're saying right now, in the basins of your flowage, all the bait fish are 20 to 30 feet of water, right? They're holding deeper than they have in the past. Is that correct?
That is correct. They are all deep. I said, you know, what's going on here? So I actually grabbed a walleye rod and jigging wrap, and tons of walleyes, and they're all between 10 and 12 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this load has some big walleyes in it, but these are all small fish. And it hasn't changed even 2 weeks.
Right. So I just was saying, Jay, before I called you, this is what I call a Mexican standoff, right? So see if this makes any sense to you. So structurally, we're out of bounds. I jokingly said that the fish are down deep, not because the water temps are up, right? Or excuse me, the fish are not shallow. The water temps are not causing the fish to not change, right? The fish are responding to that. Excuse me, I just bumbled all of that. But the fish are responding, the bait fish are responding to water temps. Therefore, the muskies are going to relate to this giant bait school, right? And the difficulty, I think, is coming from two things. Why would they bite until the walleyes get active? Right?
Yeah.
They're not going to expel the calories. And if we have a tight bite window like it's been all year long, now you have a dynamic of you have a tremendous amount of food consolidated in a very small area with a narrow bite window. Right? And that's probably what you're facing. My solution to that, Jay, this is like a call-in show, Jay. You're now, are you there, Jay? Play the sound effects.
Well, I'd like to, but I don't have that queued up right
now. Just use your mouth, sir. Anyway, my thought would be that dissecting that dynamic is maybe break away from what you're comfortable with and try to find another bite until that bait fish school moves, right? Because the reason I called to talk about it, you gave me so much information where it's hard for me. You know that body of water better than I do, and I'm just trying to work through it with you, where I go, you gave really, really detailed notes. You obviously know what's going on. Is there like a secondary bite you could look at or any other areas that kind of break differently, or is the bait fish staging all the same there?
They're staging pretty much all the same. I mean, I've done this for years. Just to give you a quick synopsis, this lake had good. This lake was sort of Chippewa River flowage area is where it is, mm-hmm. over in by Eau Claire. We had good weeds.
Slow down, Dick. Everybody's got to get their notepads out to write down your waypoints. Keep going.
I can give you those.
No, we're joking.
We had good weeds. We got some big flats. We got some good points. I mean, not a lot of huge structure, but had good weeds. Well, lo and behold, we got milfoil about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lake Association said, we have to get rid of this. It's going to destroy our lake. Everybody's going to kind of cease and desist and not be able to survive anymore. So we're going to stop this. And I went to a meeting and says, what makes you people think you're going to stop this when it's been in Minnesota for over 50 years and they haven't stopped it? We know what we're doing.
Well, they always do.
So they basically killed every weed in this flowage except lily pads. And lily pads are the creeping Charlie of what aquatic. You can't kill it no matter what. So the weeds just disappeared. So I went from, I catch about 30 to 40 muskies a year. and just I was catching five or six, and I didn't know where to go. So finally, I just said, you know something, we got tons of cribs. I got to do something different. And lo and behold, I kind of got onto your structure fishing idea about 15 years ago and started catching fish. And because they went to where the whatever structure they could, because there was no weeds, and kind of evolved from there. And I kind of stuck with it. And I'm catching probably the same number of fish, and my average size has just gone through the roof.
Heck yeah. That's killer. That's and killer.
On a lake that doesn't have any big fish in it, by the way.
They never do, do they?
No.
Have you ever noticed the schmutzes at the dock? You've been doing this for 50 years. Every schmutz at the dock said there's no big fish in every lake. And it's not because they're not trying to keep you off of them. They're just not catching them, you know? So, what?
I mean, I've caught 50-inch fish on this lake at least one the mm-hmm. last 4 years in a row. People look at me and say, where's the picture? Show me the picture. I don't take pictures, Steve, because I want to be honest with you. I don't care. There's only two people that I worry about when I caught. Me and the guy upstairs. Other than that, if you don't believe me, that's fine. That's your opinion. You know, knock yourself out.
Right.
Exactly.
One of my favorite, you may have heard us say it in the past, one of my favorite quotes from years back was a guide at the Muskie Shop who's pretty retired now, Al Frost. And he didn't take a picture of a fish. I said, why don't you take pictures? He said, the only people that care would be my mom, and she's no longer with us. No one cares. What you caught, you know what I'm saying? Everybody else just kind of turns their head and goes, oh, that wasn't 46, you know, or whatever it was. Or that doesn't look 50. So who cares? That's too cool. So with your current challenge right now, what's the pivot you're going to make? You know, are you, because like for me, I'm seeing it as I call it the Mexican standoff, for lack of a better term, where everything's in one spot and they're just waiting for something to move. You know,
well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with that scenario, the only time I've really been successful when I have like super consolidation, especially when you said it's 10 to 12 inch walleye, you're just going, holy crap, this time of year, of course the muskies are there. How do I get in front of a hungry one? Is trolling the very outside of those schools and just nonstop, just circling them and trying to compress them, to be honest with you, right? And just staying on the outside of those schools, just doing a giant donut out on the outside, waiting for a muskie to make a move, or just going looking for the muskie that doesn't know that bait school's there. So, I mean, have you seen anything that looks promising, or what kind of transition you think makes sense in your mind?
Well, we have Big Lake Wissota is about 6,800 acres, and then we've got the Yellow River and Little Lake Wissota, and those two smaller bodies of water, I imagine they're about 1,200 acres, but the Yellow River where I live right on the water.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a channel that's probably 75 yards wide by a quarter mile long that narrows down into the Yellow River and out to the Big Lake Basin. And that channel has put out more big fish than any spot on this lake consistently. In 91, I caught a 49.5 with a 26-inch girth on a sucker.
Oh, that'll do.
I mean, this thing looks like a lake trout.
Mm-hmm. That's a big...
But it's just the spot that it narrows down, but it's like 35 feet deep on most of it. It's got a little bar that comes out, a couple little points and stuff, and that thing is just chock full of big fish and bait fish. I sat last night for an hour and a half going back and forth vertical jig and fuzzy does it.
Nice. Very good.
And I'm running out of ideas, but I'm not going to give up. Tomorrow I figured I was just going to say, you know something, I'm not going to cast, put the rod in the rod holders and let's just cover ground and fish deep, shallow, and just see what I can figure out. But why are not, you know, the water temperature has been dropping pretty good. Why aren't these fish moving into shallow water?
But the flat out, the food. I mean, you've got the refrigerator's full, and that's the one thing that I, you know, with a lot of the rules of structure fishing is, you know, hey, the reason I'm looking mid shallow deep every day is, you know, they those migrations that muskie make right throughout the course of a day are based upon the acquisition of food. That's it. And so they're not coming out of their deep home range to come up and frolic and play. They're doing it because that's the most advantageous staging for eating. Right yep. now, your problem is the most advantageous staging for eating is right on the outside of that walleye school or under them. And I've seen this. I won't give up the secret on it, but, you know, I've done this time of year in Canada where literally can you get the bait down 30 feet, reel it up 1 foot, and troll it over the mud because they're sitting on the mud or they're sitting on the outside of that school. And that's a tough scenario because if you're essentially in that scenario, you have hyper-consolidation of bait fish, hyper-consolidation of muskies, and with muskies being practically non-reactionary, right? Just because you get a bait by them doesn't mean they're going to eat it. We all know that. We're looking for actively feeding fish. That's like going into the Golden Corral buffet and trying to sell a hot dog to somebody that's got a steak in his mouth.
Yeah.
And so the problem's going to be timing. Like I said, my take is I would get out there and I would just zombie troll around them. Troll and troll and troll and troll because the thought process is wherever the bait stage, let's say the top, the most shallow walleye when you start, let's say the shallowest walleye is at like 18 or 20, right? Somewhere in that zone. Yep. And that's typical and they're kind of extended down. I would have a bait, depending on what you can run, or put a mannequin in your boat or whatever you got to do, dig up a corpse so you control more rods. I would have a bait even with the walleyes and one above them, and then I would start keep working my way down, and as we got later, work my way up. So I would come in a game plan where I'm trying to bust through those walleyes like, ooh, because I'm betting on your graph when you're seeing the walleyes, you're seeing pretty clear marks. You're not seeing a lot of motion, correct?
Mm-hmm, nope.
That because they're just sitting there. They got to be somewhere. So you've done the hard part of the equation is where are all the fish? And that this is age old. You've heard it before. 90% of the fish are in 10% of the lake.
And exactly.
And it sounds like you've got 95% of the fish in probably 5% of the lake. And now all it takes for a muskie to feed itself is to turn its head left or right.
Yeah.
And so what I would.
They killed all the weeds too.
Right.
They killed all the weeds.
But the weeds, now, with that being said, now, the weeds have come back now in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years. The weeds are getting better and better every year because they quit doing all that crap. So the weeds are getting better. But
is that completely gone?
No, the milfoil's still here. It's going to be here. I don't know enough about it. And furthermore, I guess I don't want to waste my time on it, but it seems like in one area, it'll be just, you can't even, I don't care what you throw at it. You're not going to get through it. And then yep. the next year, it's nice grass, coontail, and the milfoil is gone. But then you go to another place where you haven't seen it, and it's thick there. So I don't know if this stuff moves around or whatever, but it's not a big deal. It's not a hassle. It hasn't done anything. But off of my dock, it's a big, shallow bay back here. It's full of weeds. You can't fish or nothing. But now that the weeds have died off, I can go down to my dock, catch 20-inch walleyes for 10, 15 minutes every night, floating Rapalas. Been doing it for the 42 years I've lived here. This year, you go down off the dock and you sit there for all night long. You're not going to get a fish. I'm trying to wrap my head around it and figure out why are all these fish why aren't these fish coming up shallow? There's got to be, you know, you sit there and see the minerals around the dock swimming, you know, the emerald shiners and stuff. Why aren't these walleyes coming up and feeding them like they have in the past?
It's the same extrapolation that a muskie's there on the walleye. There's a food source.
Yep.
The walleyes, just like a muskie would do, the walleyes are on food of some sort. And that's kind of the kicker where it just makes your head hurt, where there are subaquatic bug hatches, all kinds of different things that happen at weird times.
That could be. Yeah. You said it's been warmer than normal.
Warmer than normal.
It's been staying later, so there's probably bug stuff coming out of the mud.
Here in Tennessee, which was just bizarro land I ran into the other day, I went, are those what I think is in this freaking mayflies?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, that's so random. But, well, report back. Like I said, my trick would be I would go out there and zombie troll the absolute crap out of them and let us know. And, Dick, thank you for not saying anything super vulgar or racist. So we can actually, Jay, we've never called a podcast question before. right? So, and Dick is conducting himself like a human, and that's always been our fear. So thank you, Dick.
Yeah, unless
you want to say something really offensive right now so we never have to call another podcaster, now's your time.
Well, I now that I have your number on my phone, I almost didn't answer because I didn't recognize the number. And I thought, you know something? I probably should answer this and just see. So, yeah, you can you can call me anytime. I got war stories. When you got to do this, I will talk to you about Lake Vermilion in the early days.
Well, Dick, I'm going to block your number the second we get off this call. So, but thanks for listening to the podcast. Cheers, teasing, Dick.
We'll talk.
Yeah,
Steve, you are a member of Millions, so don't think you're special.
I'll talk to you soon, buddy. Be good.
All right, thanks, guys.
That was funner than it should have been. We should,
yeah.
Folks, if you're a human being and you're not going to do something stupid that I have to edit it out, yeah, put your number.
Leave your
there.
Number, yeah, in the Q&A from now on.
Yeah, if you want to. If you get on here and you go, Baba Booey, Baba Booey, okay, I would laugh.
And I promise we'll call while you're eating dinner, too.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the birth of my child. I don't care. You wrote into us, Buster. No. Yeah, listen, if things that could go sideways, I'm telling you, this is like, Jay, it's like being in the car with your parents, right? Remember when you're
born? It's
living
on the edge.
You're
living on the edge is what this is.
And your dad gives you the rules. He goes, listen, you little crit, if you make a sound, misbehave, right? I'm going to pull you alongside the road and I'll behead your sister in front of you.
I'm gonna brake check you. I know you're not wearing seatbelts.
Because it's the 60s. Right, or whatever it is, but anyway, right in.
Yeah,
all it takes.
I got tailgated. Guess what? I got tailgated by a PT Cruiser on the way home tonight.
Oh, I didn't even. What were you doing?
Yeah,
12. Those things.
I'm looking in the rear view, and there's this PT Cruiser coming up on me, hard eyeballing me.
That's ridiculous. Anyway, right? Yeah, put your number in there. We might call. We might not. But that was fun. Act like a human. That's all I'm saying. We've talked about in the past, but you know. I don't know if I don't even know if we said anything, but Dick had some interesting stuff to say there, so that's always good. Oh, Jaybird.
Yes, Steve.
Let me see. What do we got here? Oh, man, I closed out my window here, guys. Come on.
Open the window.
I'm working on it. Hold on. Ugh.
Fresh
Mike,
air.
Looking at winter jerk baits. What's your preference between Bulldog, Medusa, and the Alien Eel? I know Steve loves the Alien Eel, but Jay, what's your take? Because I fish Wisconsin.
Because I fish Wisconsin, okay.
Well, that's what I said, well, didn't I?
We've been over that quite a few times on the difference. You know, you've illustrated quite well the difference between, you know, the basic difference between Bulldogs and Medusas. And I think just last week we were talking about shallow versions of both, because those are coming into play here as the water gets colder, especially post turnover, which won't be too long. So
I think, excuse me, God, I freaking, it's been up since 5 ripping darts, but anyway, keep choking here. You can't have a favorite. That's the problem. That is the trap, Jay. That's what the bait Illuminati's want you to do. They want you to pick a side, right? There's not one bait company that has it all or has everything.
Tools in the toolbox.
Yeah. Or tools on a podcast, however you want to put it. Just me and you, Jay, a couple of tools. But, it really boils down to observing the different fall off rates of these baits, right? How a Medusa reacts in the water, how a Bulldog reacts in the water, how a Savage Gear Alien Eel or a Toothy Tough or whatever it might be. They're all different. The danger is going, I just throw Medusas, right? That's all I throw. Okay. Well, you're probably going to miss some opportunities. And the same goes for, I just throw Bulldogs, right? Have a smattering of both. They're very applicable at different times, and you'll get that it's only going to click in your head. We can say it a million times. Get your hands on them, make sure, okay, I've got, don't try to compare like a shallow Bulldog to a midweight Medusa or whatever, kind of a one for one thing, and go, oh, that's what's happening. Then you'll understand you know, you understand a far clearer path to how to use that bait. And it really boils down to, and this is the overarching thing with just anything, of being observant. And it, heck, rabbit hole incoming here. But the trick to really breaking down any bait, Jay, I don't care if it's rubber, I don't care what it is a willingness to pay attention to what the bait does well when you're not doing anything to it. Right? There you go. And God, it's funny. I actually mentioned earlier when I said, I don't know if I told it. Yeah, I had to do the stuff with Randy. And before I did the interview for him for that Livingston blog and all that stuff, I was talking to him about working topwaters. You know, I'm always getting little tips from different anglers and all this stuff.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was funny because his motif of how he's working the walking boss is, you know, really trying to bounce it in place. And he was like, bigger fish want it that way. And of course, in the back of my head, I'm going, how many times have we said, like, a posed giant jackpot or
bouncing a jackpot, right?
Bouncing in place, get it to walk in place, these triggers. And the difference between your average angler picking up a walking boss or a pose or a weagle, whatever it might be, like with a walk the dog bait, once they get it walking left to right, they're done. Right? Because the bait is what, Jay? It's a walk the dog bait. If the bait is walking the dog, then it should catch everything in its path, correct?
It's still a jerk bait.
Right. You have to do things to the bait. So what I'm getting at is once you get the baseline action of a bait down, then you really need to look at what does this bait excel at? You know, to answer the rubber question, or we couldn't be more diametrically apart between, you know, deep rubber jerk baits and a walk the dog topwater. But looking at baits and going, okay, I personally think a jackpot bounces in place better than a weagle. And if I need a bait that really has a slow advance with a lot of bounce in place, I know to use that. Right? Which is the same as going, if I need a bait that has a slightly more planed out or more, you know, forward fall and coasting fall, I'm going to use a Medusa versus the more head down action of a bulldog. And that's a deeper look at the bait than going, it's a bulldog or a Medusa. Or it's, you can't, when you're really dialing in and you're really getting dialed in, you can't just look at a bait and go, I could have one or the other. And I'm not, you know, I'm always the less is more guy when it comes to baits and whatnot, what I'm actively using and things of that nature. But looking at a bait and observing its nature and its properties and what it excels at, that takes being observant, but also takes time. And I think what the kiss of death is for a lot of guys when they're selecting baits or having success with baits is the self-fulfilling prophecy of, I don't catch any fish on Medusas, but they caught a fish on a bulldog, and guess what they throw 90% of the time? Bulldog. And Herbie always says, you tend to catch fish on what's on the end of your line, which is a great line, right? So if you're constantly throwing hellhounds, you're going to catch your fish on hellhounds. However, are you missing other fish or missing other opportunities? So there's a balance there of going, very confident with one bait, very confident with one style of presentation, while being open to look at what other presentations of that same style, what benefits or attributes do they have that I can identify and apply, right? So if you, and it's just a rabbit hole, but it's the fact of the matter, which is, okay, take it to trolling. I know that a supernatural big bait wanders side to side. Right. So a 10 inch headlock, it has a left to right wander. Right. How can I apply that? Well, I need X, Y, and Z speed, and I'm not getting bit, but I know because of my electronics or of short strikes that fish are, they're nipping my jakes. Maybe I need to get more aggressive. Right. Adding in the wander might be that. Or, okay, where would a wander come into play? Well, this is an exceptionally straight line with not a lot of structural twists and turns, right? Where do I deviate? And I'm doing a lot of open water with a left to right wander trigger strikes, where, hey, I'm doing some really intricate trolling in the watercolor, and I'm going to just troll with Jake because it's a more controlled methodology, right? Just a real, like, real overview or a 30,000 foot view of, okay, a couple applications when comparing baits. And it gets even more tighter when you get closer. There's more similarities. Unfortunately, there are some baits that are kind of like one for ones, and you go, okay, that bait's the same as that bait pretty much. There's nothing special about it. But baits that you know, and I've noticed this, baits that you kind of know really soon in your musky fishing journey, if you're a new musky angler, right? Baits that have that perennial name usually have something special about them, right? There's no denying that the Suic Thriller has a place in your tackle box, even though I made the Titan, different applications, but a bait doesn't have that kind of longevity. It doesn't have an application. And that's what I'm trying to get at. And so you can't compare a Suic and a Titan and a Bobby bait, you know, and go, I'm only fishing Suics. Well, you're not going to get through the weeds and the heavy cabbage like you will with a Titan, right? Going to be a way different experience. Or fishing reefs or this, that, and the other with a Bobby versus that or later in the season. So details, 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 and then time and really scrutinizing what these do. I had a guy tell me, and it was a great analogy one time. He said, you know, anybody can carve a hunk of wood or carve a sculpture with a pocket knife, but a real sculptor has very specified sculpting tools because they fit a very narrow purpose, right? So the more detail-oriented you are, the more dialed in you are, the more you'll realize you need more specialized tools opposed to, I'm just going to throw a bait. Make any sense?
I agree. Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it. That's a big part of it.
And like selection. I said, that's the lure. Yeah, the lure selection is a deeper thing than, and again, it depends on what you want to do. If you just want to get there with your cousin and catch some fish, but you go, you know, I'm looking at them going, okay, again, I'll pick on Titans and Suics and Diving Rods because it's kind of, well, heck, I got a lot of baits now, but, you know, when am I picking up this, picking up that? You know, I know if I encounter really dense cover, a really, really, really finicky fish, I'm going for the tightener. If it's more like a rocky open water thing, I might actually grab a Suic out, you know, as a rough generality where I'll get even more dialed in on again, removing weights out of the Titan or with my gliders. I've got more glide baits than one should have. And I'm looking at, does this bait have a lot of wobble at rest, right? Or is it like a more vertical fall? And you'll notice that in varying degrees and in varying seasonality, these things are going to matter. And so the devil's in the details, as with all things. And so keeping an eye out for that. And I think, Jay, for not going completely off the deep end, at least cover what some of the details of what you need to look for, right? When I'm just running my mouth here. Start at the basics. Crankbaits. Not all crankbaits are created equal. Let's take shallow running crankbaits. So when I say a shallow running crankbait, let's think about shallow raiders, crane baits, slammers, super shad wraps, that ilk of crankbaits, right? That size, that general thing. Mm-hmm. What am I looking at? I'm looking at rate of rise and the intensity of the wobble, right? So taking a crane bait versus a super shad wrap, those are insanely different actions in my book, right? They're both,
yeah.
They're both balsa wood. They're both hyper buoyant, but the vibrational profile and the action off a super shad wrap is far different than a crane bait. Yeah. And they're not the application is not the same. Where, you know, that the twitching action and the slightly slower float back of a baby shallow raider, the little 5-inch shallow raider, is dynamically different than that of a slammer. So, you know, comparing two wood baits in the same class and then two plastic baits in the same class, what they do and how you could best apply them couldn't be any different, right? Because a Booker bait with the slower float back is a better twitch bait, in my opinion, than the hyper active quick float back of a slammer. Slammer's fast. Slammer, in my mind, is crank, rip, you know, let it float back a little bit, but you've got to keep it boogie-woogieing before it's back on the surface, right? Where, okay, things are really slow, and I really got to downsize a lot. When we got the baby shower and twitch, twitch, let it hang, let it bang for a second, do it again, do it again. So, you know, in that bait class, looking at action, and then also looking at what is the best cadence, right? We're going way down the rabbit hole. But I'm going, what speed of advance do I need? What action do I need? And what bait has a cadence, or what cadence works best with this bait, however you want to look at it, right? You're not going to do a really nice slow rise bait with a fast rise bait. You're just not. Not going to happen. And that's the way you need to look at these baits. And even, you don't, I'm not saying or encouraging or anything, you don't need to go buy anything. You need to take what you have, and you need to go to the pond and stop trying to catch a muskie and dig into them and go, what does this bait do? What does that bait do? Right? Well, this bait, whatever bait it might be, the deepest it goes is 4 feet. Right? Take that off your list for targeting deep fish. And you go, well, heck, this one rock bar I fish tops out at 4 feet. Maybe there's an application there. Right? What would you say, Jay? Am I down the rabbit hole, or am I off the reservation? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. You have to know your tools. You have to. I mean, and that's an extremely valuable thing, is to take baits that you're not super familiar with and basically practice with them. You said go out to a pond or something, but you know, if you find you go out and it's kind of a calm day and sun's out, you can get a good look at the bait and see what it's doing. It, you know, halfway in when it's coming in at depth, you know, and see how it's reacting, behaving to every little, you know, movement that you're juking and jiving with it. So that's extremely valuable. You got to know that stuff. It boils down to the difference between bulldogs and Medusa. I mean, there's a huge difference in those. I mean, you know, Medusas have, you know, a lot more drag. You know, they've got three tails. There's more drag. There's more planing with that bait, kind of with the flat bottom. The bulldog, you know, it's got it's almost more enhanced with the pitch of the dive. We're talking about regular, not the shallow version,
right
you know, the ones that you can work at speed. Yeah There's a big difference, and again, you'll learn how to apply them, you know, at whatever depth and, you know, your target location is and all that in due time. But you got to know the action and how they perform best by practicing with them.
And I mean, if you're just starting, you know, look at your running depth, and it hopefully it's obvious to you, not exactly what the finite application is, but the differences. And that's why I started by saying be observant. You know, just be observant, and just don't huck it out there, stare at a bird or whatever. Put the, you know, put the 45 seconds into a cast. What is that doing? How's that doing that, right? I've learned a ton about baits not trying to catch fish. You know, a ton of going, okay, what does that actually look like in the water? You know, and I'd say, and I kind of like was saying with the Randy thing or the bounce in place, the power of a slack line on a fishing lure is universal.
With muskies, it's huge.
Huge. And what does that do? When you hear, I said it earlier, so clarify if it's really not in your wheelhouse or whatnot, but a modicum of slack line, and the bait doesn't have to be moving under your power or be under tension the entire time. You know, a foot of slack line is all the difference between getting bit or not half the time.
Exactly.
And picking up a foot of line, when you have a reel that the handle turn is 39 inches, you move the handle a quarter of a turn or less, whatever, you're not going to miss strikes. And I think that's what gets people when I'm trying to teach them on the boat, like how to fish something with a slack line twitch or a slack line lay to it. What if I get hit? Well, you'll know it. You know, you might, I mean, if one comes up and just delicately kisses the tail of a Titan, maybe not, right? But that's not going to happen. and you wouldn't catch them anyway if they're just, you know, nosing something.
No.
You're going to know the strike. You're going to be aware of the strike. You've just got to get comfortable with having that tiny bit of slack. And it's not like you don't feel things. People, like I said, the less is more. And the more I do this, the more I realize less is more, slower is better. You know, I've made a career out of fishing slower than everybody else. Always have. And being able to do so with a little bit of slack and a little bit more play is just is just a game changer there. You know, and that's going to change your life. But anyway, I'm sorry. Rabbit hole city, Jay. Rabbit hole city. Well, anyway, let's see if we get any more phone numbers. Totally unscripted, unexpected there. I'm glad that went well because that was funny. So we got a nice old man, not some crazy person. So anyway, Jay Bird, say goodnight. I'm betting, I hope not. Let me know in advance, but I'm betting next week is like the big turnover kerfuffle. We'll see.
It's coming soon. So it's coming. We might have to address that next week. Yeah,
anyway, Jay Bird, say good night.
All right. Night, guys. Thank you. Thank you.